Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Statman Dave Football Podcast. This is episode 56. First up, we're going to talk the news as always. Then we're going to talk about the tactical masterclass by Zinedine Zidane on Diego Simeone and finish up with a bit of Europa League fun. Manchester United away at Celta Vigo in the Europa League. We're going to preview it right here. First up, let's talk the news. So some sad news coming out of Manchester with Aaron Lennon apparently being detained by police under the Mental Health Act after appearing to show some bad signs near a motorway apparently. And you know, his agents come out and said he is receiving treatment for a stress-related illness. Very, very sad news. Mental health is something that takes everybody. You know, it takes yourself, it takes your family members. It's just one of these things that, you know, especially in Western Europe, we need to address a little bit more in terms of, you know, awareness to mental health issues. You know, I've been through some parts myself, and hopefully maybe one day over the summer I'll talk about that on this podcast, because of course we've got to, you know, increase the awareness for that. And one big thing, remember, if you are in a bad place, in a dark place, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. You won't be there forever. But anyway, in the UK, if you want to call somebody to help you in these sort of situations, this is the Samaritans are open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year on 116 123. Make sure, obviously, you need to reach out if you are in that situation to family members or to maybe someone at the end of that phone, because obviously they can try and help you. Anyway, let's move on to talk about football and get away from the dark issues of the modern world. First up, Monchi, who has joined Roma, has confirmed that Francesco Totti will be retiring at the end of the season. What an absolute legend. He will start his role as a director. Roma going down the similar model. We've seen at the likes of Arsenal. We've seen at Bayern Munich. We've seen at Ajax. So, you know, it's good moves from Monchi, keeping him around the club. You know, such a positive player for Roma. Arguably could have left the club, but is the true club captain, the true club legend. Anyway, in other news, 3 years ago today, Leicester City won the Premier League and lifted the trophy. Incredible, that was just a mere 12 months ago. In terms of managerial shifts, West Ham apparently reviewing Slaven Bilic's position at the end of the season. Big reports that David Moyes may not be sacked as Sunderland manager, or he won't quit. And is planning already for life in the Championship. In other big news in Spain, Catalonian radio are reporting that Barcelona have made initial contact with ex-Barcelona player Laurent Blanc. An interesting one. Obviously, Laurent Blanc's PSG, aesthetically on the eye, weren't the greatest team that you're ever going to watch, but they did play that passing football, and maybe at Barcelona with better players, they may be getting, you know, that type of thing going. Obviously, his link with Verratti could be a positive thing for Barcelona. Anyway, moving on, Dimasio has been making rumours for fun, saying PSG are considering getting Arsene Wenger to replace Unai Emery, and of course, Arsenal apparently getting Allegri. Another news that Dimasio is reporting today is that Monaco have rejected an €85 million bid for Kylian Mbappe. Unfortunately, that was squashed by Sky Sports News that said that was a load of rubbish. But Kylian Mbappe at Man United with Marcus Rashford, with Anthony Martial, that would be some tasty front three. Anyway, moving on. It's Champions League time. Let's do it. So let's talk about the big game. Real Madrid 3, Atletico Madrid 0. Cristiano Ronaldo finishing masterclass. But the game was massively one-sided. And for me, it was down to Zinedine Zidane. Tactically, excellent. Against Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid, as we mentioned on Monday, have been playing very, very well of late. Been pressing very, very well in their 4-4-2. Have been controlling the team, the opposition in a defensive sense, in terms of a spatial sense. They just looked so, so good in the, you know, going forward as well, and playing very narrow and linking together. They've just looked awesome. What Zinedine Zidane did, though, was set Real Madrid up in a shape that we haven't really seen this season, a narrow 4-4-2 diamond, with Casemiro at the base of the diamond, Luka Modric on the right-hand side, and Toni Kroos on the left-hand side, and Isco at the tip. That was an absolute masterstroke from Zinedine Zidane. And unfortunately, Atletico Madrid, who their shape is a 4-4-2 in defence, it presses in a 4-4-2. The diamond, unfortunately, made that press redundant. If, for example, Atletico Madrid went up and aggressively pressed Toni Kroos and Luka Modric from central midfield like they have done in recent games between the two sides, bam, Casemiro would either be in the space deep or Isco would be an attacking midfield in between the lines. It was so difficult for Atletico Madrid to get the press right. And of course, it was the movement of Isco that was so perfect in that first half, drifting around, just controlling the game in a, you know, a tactical and a passing sense. In the first half, he completed 100% of his passes. And what was so nice about the movement was that Isco did drift to, say, the left wing. The rest of the front three of Real Madrid, let's say Isco is in this front three, would shift. So, for example, Ronaldo would go on the right, Benzema would stay as a striker. So it kept that sort of width in the final third, and, you know, really good options for Isco when he got on the ball to play to those two guys. But it was fantastic, fantastic tactics. It really negated Atletico Madrid's press. What they do so well is when, you know, when they get to the right moment or they do trigger a press in your half, is they press so, so hard and so aggressively. But this Real Madrid shape that arguably looked like a 2-3-1-4 with, you know, the two centre-halves, the three central midfielders that dropped very, very deep. You know, arguably Toni Kroos was playing more of as a left-back and Modric more of a right-back than actually a central midfielder. That's how the shape looked, how it dropped back so deep. And then Marcelo and Carvajal, before his injury, would pretty much join Ronaldo and Benzema and create a front four, and then Isco would just be floating in between the lines. Quite frequently, he'd pick up a position behind Marcelo, which just shows how fluid this system was and how well, tactically, Zinedine Zidane has got these guys playing. You know, how well he can have a game plan and that, and these guys, you know, pull it off. It's absolutely incredible. Incredible stuff from Zinedine Zidane, who I've been a bit of a big fan of this season. I think tactically he's done some real, real good stuff with this Real Madrid team. And again, we saw tactically perfect. Fullbacks high. Isco as a number 10. Ronaldo up top. Perfect stuff from Zinedine Zidane. Completely counteracting what Atletico have done so well, pressing that sort of 4-4-2 diamond, the two strikers with Saul. Saul pretty much couldn't get into the game because there was such a, you know, such a difficulty in who to press, who's on the ball, what do I do in this certain situation. And in the game, he only made three tackles. You know, Saul in these big games is usually racking 11, 12 tackles. And that, I think that shows how tactically he was made redundant, which again, credit to Zinedine Zidane. And then again, the perfect tactical masterclass from Zidane was completed when he switched to the 4-5-1. Asensio comes on, they go back to the 4-3-3. Isco, you know, on a yellow card, makes a bit of a silly tackle, is subbed off. Asensio comes on, pace, skills. You know, what we've seen from this season in the Champions League is a real elite player. Fantastic technique from range, but we've not seen that recently. What we've seen recently is the ability to hold the ball, to drive with the ball, but also make runs off the ball. There's link up with Marcelo. It was fantastic when he was on the pitch. And obviously Vasquez coming on as well. Real Madrid switching from that 4-4-2 diamond when they've got the lead, when they're in control of the game, to pretty much that 4-5-1 that we've seen with the central press, with Kroos and Modric going back a little bit more, you know, further up the pitch to press, and then the counter-attack. And obviously both goals, you know, coming from a little bit of counter-attacking situations. Obviously the first goal was, it was a little bit of interplay before, but it was a turnover that, you know, seven or eight passes later, the ball was in the back of the net. The third goal, obviously a piece of counter-attacking beauty. Ronaldo driving with the ball, Asensio overlapping, Toni Kroos and Casemiro making runs into the penalty area, little Casemiro step over, Ronaldo hat-trick. But fantastic stuff from Zinedine Zidane. Let's just touch on their centre-halves as well, who are so impressive at defending the wide areas. I think it's a skill that you've got to be the best defender in the world, the best centre-back in the world, to sort of possess this at the moment, because teams like to play high with the ball, their fullbacks like to get on, so these defenders need to defend in the wide areas. And it was absolutely insane how good Varane and Ramos are at defending the wide areas. And it really showed against Atletico. Whenever Atletico got into those wide areas, Ramos and Varane won the duels. Simple as that. It was just so impressive. They won 100% of their tackles between them, and it just showed how good this Real Madrid team is from back to front. Zidane's tactics and everything, they've got it all. Moving on to, of course, Kroos Control, who ran the show in central midfield. That is Toni Kroos. I mentioned his position sort of as a left back. As Marcelo, you know, pushed on, It meant that they had the overload out wide, especially when Madrid switched to that sort of 4-5-1 at the end of the game. So Madrid defending with two banks of four. So if Marcelo's pushing on and there's a winger, you've got a 2v2 out wide, so you can't afford to press there. So what Toni Kroos did was just sit behind Marcelo. It was so interesting. It was so fascinating to see again another tactical evolution from Real Madrid, from Zinedine Zidane, and of course from Toni Kroos. Then in fact, he was finding a little bit of a pocket of space where a natural left back would play. You know, we've seen the importance of left backs really and right backs grow in European football, how they have more time on the ball than the central midfielders. We saw Toni Kroos do that. He's sort of become, an old school halfback. You know, you think of the old system, the WM, the two fullbacks, then the three halfbacks. That's what Real Madrid were doing. Real Madrid, again, inverting the pyramid. And it's just excellent to see Zinedine Zidane really progress here. But, giving Kroos the control of the game, give him the control, it's insane. He completed 96% of his passes and managed to hit the century 100 passes, which in fact was more than Gabi and Antoine Griezmann managed combined. Incredible stuff from, of course, Toni Kroos. Free as a bird to dictate the play of the game, really run it for Real Madrid. But again, I want to touch on another one of their another midfielders who I keep talking about, and that is Casemiro. Again, he showed why he's the best defensive midfielder in world football. What's also interesting about Casemiro is his intelligence in this game. We spoke about his raw aggression, his ability to win tackles, to intercept. But what was so important for this game was his positioning off the ball. So when Atletico did try and press Toni Kroos with their strikers, again, Real opened themselves up and created pretty much a 3v2 in central midfield. That is with the defensive midfielder and Casemiro, Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. So how they picked them up is that Kroos and Modric would be picked up, which left Casemiro absolutely free. So what he'd consistently do is just move ahead of the two central midfielders and also move into a sort of attacking midfield role and just receive the ball and then play out of the press from Atletico. And it was so important, so intelligent from Casemiro, who has pretty much everything in his game. And it's good to have a player that's seen as not technically that good, but intelligence-wise, perfect. A perfect thing, drifting forward, becoming the free man and receiving the ball and getting Real Madrid through the thirds and sort of breaking that press, which, unlocks Atletico. The reason why Atletico is so good is because their 4-4-2 is so compact. But if you're having someone like Casemiro in there that's drifting in between these lines and not someone that you expect, it's really interesting. And as well, he played as a defensive midfielder but consistently got forward. He assisted the first goal, the step over for the third goal. But what was more impressive again was he kept on being free in Atletico's half. And it looked like Atletico left him. It was like a player they were like, oh, we don't need to pressurise him. Playing Football Manager, instructions not to press this player. And he kept on having open spaces in the opposition's half, to slide through balls to Ronaldo, to Benzema, to Asensio. And I think if, he does improve that over the next few seasons, which you could definitely say that Casemiro will improve, because that's the type of player he is. He's just a player that seems to consistently get better, work on little things. We're seeing assists and goals in his game. If you start to see these passes, defence splitting passes, you're going to have to be dealing with three unbelievable ball playing central midfielders. How are you going to deal with that? Maybe invert the pyramid and play an attacking midfielder on one of them, and then two central midfielders man to man like Mourinho does. But it was incredible stuff from Casemiro once again, and his game by numbers was a little bit special for the young lad. Well, not really young, 24, 25, starting to hit the real peak of his career, and I think we're seeing that from his absolute performances. But in the game, he obviously grabbed the assist, made two interceptions, three blocks, won four tackles, made six clearances and 66 passes. The best defensive midfielder in the world right now. And of course, talking Real Madrid, we're going to talk about CR7. Who scored the first hat-trick in a Champions League semi-final since Lewandowski against Real Madrid in the 2012-13 season. That was one of the best individual hat-tricks I've ever seen. And he scored four goals that day. He was just so good. The the Puskás goal that he scored, the little drag back and then the shot was just unbelievable. But Ronaldo, again, coming up trumps. In terms of his first goal, was it offside? Again, this is going back to what I spoke about before, the issue of the offside rule. Ronaldo was stood in an offside position. He was in the penalty area. He is going to be taking some attention away from the centre-back to realise where he is. For me, it's offside, and that phase of play should have been stopped there. But the rule, how it's ruled right now, it's not offside. That's the issue. My interpretation of that is that should be offside. It's an advantage of Ronaldo's gain from being offside, coming onside, and then scoring a goal.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And I just think this rule needs to be completely, you know, sorted out. But again, who expected Casemiro to be there? Absolutely not me. In terms of the 2-0, the second goal, what a absolute finish. I think what the thing we see about Ronaldo is he may not have the acceleration, the ability to really, you know, go up players from deep like he did at Manchester United. What I'm seeing now is just a clinical finisher. The finish for the goal was just absolutely insane. The second goal, the focus he had on the ball, the technique to get over the ball, the anticipation for the ricochet as well. As soon as I saw Ronaldo in that position, I thought, he's going to judge that this is going to ricochet and he's just going to score. And that's exactly what happened. It was an incredible goal. Credit, of course, to my pal Marcelo as well for pinging the ball into Benzema's feet. Marcelo, shout out to you, European second best player right now, because CR7 is number one, I think, after this performance. The third goal as well, a classic counter-attack. Ronaldo's driving through the middle, lovely overlap, and then a perfect pullback from Vasquez for the goal. Simple stuff from Cristiano Ronaldo, whose stats are getting a little bit silly in the Champions League. In fact, he scored more goals in the knockout stages than the group stages. He scored 13 goals in the last two seasons in the knockout stages, and that is 8 more than any other player. And to finish off, the stats apocalypse, as I'm going to call it, Cristiano Ronaldo scored the most goals in the Champions League semi-finals in history with 11 goals. Absolutely incredible stuff from Real Madrid. You've got Casemiro, Toni Kroos, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Zinedine Zidane really coming up trumps against Atletico Madrid. But what went wrong for Atletico Madrid? Who is to blame? Is it Simeone? Is it Saul? Is it Koke? Well, first off, I think Simeone went far too open too early in the game. I think that he should have just kept it tight. I don't think he should have thrown on the four forwards and gone to pretty much a 4-2-4, because that killed the game off. That was that third goal that was pretty much Atletico overextending themselves. We've seen him do it this season. I think the Sporting Gijón game was a game that I watched where he did look like he started with this 4-2-4 shape. And Atletico only started to play well when they went back to the 4-4-2. Koke partnering Gabby in midfield, I just think it's they're just too exposed, and all the things that you say about Atletico, the counter-attack, the speed, the lack of distance between the lines, when they look like this 4-4-2, when you've got Correa, when you've got Fernando Torres, when you've got Antoine Griezmann, and of course Gaetan on the pitch, it's just too open, too exposed, and you're not getting Koke in his best position, you're not getting the best out of you Antoine Griezmann, you know, his movement is restricted when you're playing the system. And I just think Diego Simeone got it a little bit wrong, and maybe should have just gone with the 2-0 defeat. You know, you nick a goal early, that completely changes that game. We've seen some crazy stuff this season in the Champions League especially. So I think Simeone let himself down a little bit there. And again, what he needs to work on is breaking teams down a slightly different way and attacking a slightly different way. The narrowness is beautiful. But when that narrowness isn't working, like Real Madrid, who did shut that space off very, very well, you know, either Ramos or Varane stepping out, or, you know, Casemiro bossing that zone, supported by Modric and Kroos, they need another plan. They need a little bit of a different game plan. They need the likes of Antoine Griezmann to potentially drift right and connect, which we'll talk about next. Antoine Griezmann, who had a pretty average game, should we say, or pretty poor game, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, failed to get a shot on goal, didn't create a chance, and completed 0 dribbles. And again, he was suffocated because he was playing too narrow. What he really needed to do was drift wide and sort of overload the flanks horizontally instead of vertically, like he usually does, extend the pitch vertically, running in behind or dropping deep. He needs to get that lateral movement and combine with the wingers, the wide players, combine with Koke, combine with, whoever it was, Gaetan, or Carrasco on the other side. We didn't see enough of that interplay between Griezmann and Othello and attacker. It was a little bit isolated, a little bit too narrow. Defensively, though, did very well with more tackles than any other forward on the pitch. But it's just that evolution of Antoine Griezmann. What we want to see next is a player that can unlock certain defences and get involved in a game where he's starved of possession, he's starved of the ball, and his usual movement forwards and backwards isn't quite working. But I do think it is to do with the whole approach from Atletico that in fact was done. And I think the big thing was Saul, like I mentioned before, his lack of intensity, only won a single tackle and got booked far too early. But it was the Real Madrid shape. What maybe Simeone could have done, mix the shape up, maybe go to a three at the back system to allow them to press. That is obviously going a 3v2 at the back for Atletico. If they can throw, if they just move Hernandez round, tuck in with the likes of Godin and Savic, maybe drop, Koke maybe to right wing back, go to a 3-5-2 and then try and press again, because then you would have had a 3v3 in the centre of the park. It may have worked a slightly bit better, but again, it's Simeone has tried to tinker this season. Maybe the 4-3-3 could have been a better option as well. We saw him use that a lot last season to good effect, but we haven't seen it as much this year. But it just seems that the press was all gone. The press was broken. That was Zidane's greatness, but also the intensity potentially wasn't there in certain Atletico players. Especially, I'm so surprised. Saul, who was brilliant the weekend, man of the match by a country mile, just didn't show up at all. Another player that could have got into the game a little bit earlier was Koke, who didn't really get into the game that first half. Second half, he did quite well. He completed the most passes in the final third in the whole game, but I just thought no chances created, a little bit too deep at times, a move to central midfield a little bit too early, not in a 4-3-3. Can I cost Simeone and can I cost Atletico? What does it mean for the second leg? Well, in fact, for me, the game is completely over, but Koke doesn't think so. This is football, so a comeback can always happen. Just ask PSG. But in fact, I think 3-0 is a little bit too much for this Zinedine Zidane Real Madrid team. They're so patient on and off the ball that they'll just wait for you to overexpose yourself, overextend yourself, and bam! You got Ronaldo, you got Benzema, you got Asensio on the break. I think Asensio should potentially be used from the start in the second leg because of his pace that he offers. It's a little bit different to Isco, but I can't wait. It's going to be a great game in the second leg. Anyway, moving on, let's talk Europa League action. Manchester United going away to Celta Vigo. It's going to be a massive, massive game. Man United kind of bottled it in the league in the last week or so. Again, too many draws, basic errors. This is kind of their only real option to get into the Champions League. And they kind of need to focus on one or the other now, right now. If you consider the Crystal Palace game, that might be a must-win for Manchester United. Last game of the season is on a Sunday. The Europa League final's on the Wednesday. Fortunately, it's time to decide, Mourinho. It's time to decide where your eggs, which basket you're going to put your eggs in. But moving on to United, injuries have been a big, big issue. So many defenders out injured. Bailly potentially out of the game, coming off injured against Swansea. Reports are they should be okay. Reports of Pogba are back. But I think it's these defenders that we're worried about. Luke Shaw out for the season again. Smalling and Jones have been missing for the last 2 months. Crazy stat that I stumbled on the other day. Chris Smalling's missed 22 games this season. In the 5 years from 2007 till 2011, Nemanja Vidic and Patrice Evra missed 15 games in those 5 years, and Smalling has done that more in one single season. That's the quality that you get when you sign proper centre-backs. Anyway, let's move on to the Manchester United starting 11 that I'd go with against Celta Vigo. So I'd probably go David De Gea in goal, Valencia, Bailly, Blind, Darmian into midfield, go Herrera, Pogba sitting together, then a three behind Marcus Rashford and Mkhitaryan, Marouane Fellaini, Jess Lingard, and of course Marcus Rashford up top. The reason why I go with Marouane Fellaini as a number 10 is because of the performance of Raul Garcia at the weekend. So, in fact, Bilbao beat Celta Vigo 3-0 at the weekend, which is a pretty interesting result. They did rest a lot of players, but what they couldn't do is deal with Raul Garcia. Not just in a goal sense, but he completely put them in control with aerial ability. So in the game, there was contested 11 aerial duels, winning 89% of them. It was so dominant in the air. And Raul Garcia pretty much is the Spanish Marouane Fellaini. They play a very similar role. They're aggressive in the press. They're very, very good in the air. And you can create chances off their head. And I think the Marouane Fellaini should be used in the Raul Garcia role against Celta Vigo. You know, you think about the balls they played up to him. He created three chances with headed passes. Raul Garcia against Celta Vigo, that is, at the weekend. The real Marouane Fellaini can be that same thing. The Celta Vigo team will come out, they'll press, they'll be very, very aggressive from the start. United need to potentially go long to Marouane Fellaini to bypass that press and get those attackers, Marcus Rashford, Mkhitaryan and Jess Lingard, into that final third with the ball at their feet running at the Celta Vigo defence. Because this Celta Vigo defence isn't anything special. And I think that was a weakness from them, going aerially, and the press and everything with United makes perfect sense for United just to go long and look to, you know, put the emphasis on Celta Vigo to break United down and, you know, sit a bit deeper. Players that we need to watch out for, of course, Iago Aspas, 17 goals in La Liga this season, 5 in the Europa League. Been a real revelation back at Celta Vigo. Seems like players sort of make it at Celta Vigo. You think of Nolito, who moved to Manchester City, had a great season at Celta Vigo before. You think of players like Rafinha under Luis Enrique, in fact, at Celta Vigo. Top, top players. But Aspas, you know, fantastic. Been playing more on the right-hand side, starting off through the middle as a striker, but has been played more on the right-hand side there. The front four, they'll probably go with the 4-2-3-1. The front four will be Vaz, Sistu, Aspas and Guidetti. Sistu we saw last season, or Man United fans saw last season against Michelin, who impressed it. Very, very good. Good skills, good techers, you know, can beat you 1v1. Maybe decision-making isn't the greatest, but a very, very good player, very, very raw, very physical. Guidetti, of course, Manchester City, ex-Manchester City player, great little spell at Feyenoord, and then got ill, as we believe, and has sort of stumbled around European football, and Celta Vigo, again, seems to be back in the goals and back in scoring. So there is some players in this team that you need to look out for. Malio, their right fullback, has got the most assists for them in the Europa League this season. Again, someone to watch out for. But I feel if United do go long and do you know, push for it, it should be comfortable, let's say that. They use Marouane Fellaini's strength in this game. This is where you need to go long to Fellaini. United will comfortably win. I'm going to go 2-1 to Manchester United with Henrik Mkhitaryan scoring his 5th goal away in Europe, which is a Manchester United record in a single season. Anyway, guys and girls, that's been that for the Statman Dave Football Podcast. Make sure you drop a you know, subscribe on iTunes, write a review, and of course check me out on Twitter at Statman Dave. Over and out. See you later. Goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.